Hello.
Aisha and a Polish sound recorder. And a check, 1, 2.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
We are back with our podcast.
Is there no
space? Gordon say hello.
Is there no space for me to say
sorry.
Hello?
Oh, tip for me.
Okay. Hello. Go ahead.
Okay, so we've got Gordon, Peter, and I back again. The original team. I was away in LA, so I wasn't on the last one. Apparently, it was more successful.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, that was Rosie just name dropping.
We really missed you so much so that I believe our last podcast was our most ever listened to episode. So it's great to have you back, Rosie.
Anyway, 2018. It's a new year.
What's your New Year's resolution?
I have to become rich.
So this episode, we're going to be talking about the things we're looking forward to in 2018. Not personally, although you can, you know, drop that in if you want to, but professionally, what are the trends or the interesting things that we're looking forward to seeing this year? For me, the thing that's going to be really interesting this year, and we did a podcast about this a couple of months ago, back at the end of last year, is computer vision. I'm really fascinated by computer vision. I think it's got incredible potential, and I think 2018 is the year that we're going to start to see this adopted into the mainstream. I think Google Lens has got an incredible future ahead of it. I think it's got so many applications from accessibility. It opens up brand new avenues, but also really is just kind of the next input into phones. After kind of typing and speaking, this idea of having the camera as an input as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about this, especially in terms of fashion. So, basically, when you see pictures of influencers or celebrities or models on Instagram at the moment, what they do is tag themselves and the fashion brands that they wear. So you can like see Rihanna wearing something and she'll tag Gucci, and then that's your way of kind of going, okay, I want to buy that. But obviously the problem with that is that a lot of these price tags are like £20,000, so it's not accessible, and you would want something that was similar, but you obviously don't want to pay £20,000. The other thing is,
Noel, your render queue has completed processing.
When you see something that you like online, at the moment it's quite a tedious process where, like, I remember I watched Girl Boss, and she was wearing these maroon flared high-waisted trousers, and as soon as I saw them I was like, I need those in my life. And it resorted to the point where I was on Google typing in ABBA flared trousers because the search was so bad, like I couldn't find anything. I think it's Kim Kardashian and a startup called Craze.
I don't know.
So they've made a new app called Screenshot. And the idea is that you download this app and you take photos of outfits, and it will tell you like where you can buy similar things. So obviously if it was like a £20,000 blazer from Gucci, you could like take a photo of it and it would be like, okay, Topshop is selling one similar for 100, or Misguided is selling one similar for 20. So I feel like it's an accessible way to be fashionable.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting, the thing you touched on there briefly, this idea of like, sometimes you don't know how to explain in words the thing you're looking for. You know, you can see it and you can have a mental model of it, but you don't know how to say high-waisted, flared trousers with a certain, you know, there might be things about those trousers that you're not consciously picking up on that you really like. It might be a small detail somewhere, and you can't kind of verbalize that, whereas with computer vision it picks up on those things, or is capable of picking up on those things.
Yeah,
I guess it's a kind of more natural, easier input into search in this respect.
So
we talked, we talked about that in our Hack Week, in our last computer vision dedicated podcast, where people take snaps of things to keep notes, right?
Yeah.
And I explained an example with Danusha, our strategy director. She was looking for a game for a friend, and I found it. She was like, let me write that down. I said, no, open up Assistant, take Lens, and it did the image to text stuff. And then she had it there. She had the link there. She could buy it straight away. So that kind of shortcutting, a new way of inputting into our life, is probably the way the computer vision will become most prevalent, I imagine,
this year. Yeah, and it's also kind of outsourcing knowledge or giving yourself knowledge you don't have. So going back to the example of fashion again, if I were to see something I like, or even home accessories, and there's a certain pattern on it, but I don't know the name of that pattern. Mm. You know, I'm not good with, I know tartan and I know herringbone, and those are the two patterns I know.
What's herringbone?
It's like,
it's a bit like dog.
Difficult to describe.
Difficult to describe.
Case in point.
But, you know, you could not know what that pattern is, but really like it, and you take your photo, you Google Lens it or whatever, you use your fashion app, and it tells you what that pattern is. And now you have that knowledge all of a sudden, whereas that's something you wouldn't have been able to do by verbalizing it through text or speech.
But it's also a contextual thing too. Like, my friend works at ASOS, and she says that they have, I can't remember for sure, but I think it's like 8 different types of fashion girls. So there's like street fashion, there's preppy fashion. So when you see an outfit, there's a wider context of like, it's not just the fact you're wearing blue high-waisted trousers, it's a whole style around it.
A whole look.
Yeah, so if you typed in like high-waisted navy blue flare trousers, I would get something back that my grandma would wear from M&S, where I'm actually looking for something that's like, you know, a play on kind of a vintage style. So yeah, I think that's also interesting what you're saying, and it's a wider contextual thing.
I think it's got so many different applications of just... Who forgot to turn their phone off? That was a computer.
Noel, your second render queue has completed processing.
I think it's got so many different applications of things that you don't think about, but just make them a little tiny bit easier. One thing is just even scanning a website address, a URL that's in on an advert or on a poster, and it turning into a link that you can click and you can open, rather than, you know, taking a photo of it and then opening it up later and having to remember that and type it in manually. It just creates this really simple connection between the physical world and the digital world. And I think that's going to have immense power as well, to be able to put out an advertiser, physical advertising campaign, and have people being able to use their camera to just connect to that digitally.
So, like, you know how with Netflix you've got the algorithm where it kind of says, oh, you've watched The Crown and you've watched a documentary about Princess Diana, so you might like to watch Victoria. Like, when you're searching on ASOS or something, it will recommend clothes that you've looked at before or is kind of similar. But with this, because you're inputting so many visual references, I think it's going to make recommendations a lot smarter and easier.
I'm really excited that Google recently announced their Auto ML, which is basically a way for people to create their own computer vision models without having to know machine learning algorithms, without having to, you know, understand it. They could just upload their own objects, upload their own things, tag them all, and it kind of democratizes this way, or it democratizes the technology as well. So I'd expect to see a lot more adoption of that this year.
So quite a lot of niche interests hopefully emerging from that, for example, fishing.
I saw one the other day, which is I saw a great one, perfect example of which is light bulbs. Mm. Just, you know, take a photo of a light bulb and it'll tell you what the model of the light bulb is.
I'm quite surprised at the slowness of adoption from brands of this kind of stuff, because it's been around for a while. Obviously accelerating now, but there's the QR code stuff and then the marker stuff that ad agencies tended to drive quite a lot. But using computer vision, even just to recognize a brand mark, has been possible for a few years, and I don't see anybody really doing it. You could do cylindrical markers, you could do all this stuff for a couple of years now. Obviously now we're getting more and more power in our hands. It's getting more easier and easier to identify objects and brands via computer vision.
We know from talking to one of our potential clients recently that they did try using computer vision 3 or 4 years ago, and they said the recognition just wasn't good enough then. Mm-hmm. It just literally was not good. Yes, the technology there, but the recognition wasn't there. It wasn't powerful enough. Mm. And with a lot of augmented reality, which kind of ties in nicely to computer vision, yeah, that's been around for a few years as well, but it's always required you to have an extra app. And it's always been, you know, just because the phones haven't supported it natively, the performance has just been a little bit down. But yeah, like, none of this is new, but as you said, it's accelerated now. Mm. It's becoming easier and more powerful to do this stuff.
Do you think that a lens, when it comes out in its fully blown iteration and it's integrated into all the latest Google phones, part of Android, core part, do you think that's going to see the explosion of computer vision applications and augmented reality uptake?
Yeah, I think so. I think bringing it into, or more tightly into, Assistant is a logical next step. So at the moment in Assistant, again, you type or you speak to it, but why not bring Lens in there? Why not just have a camera as an extra thing? Whether or not they open that up to third-party apps, I don't know yet. But I think it's kind of an obvious thing, especially now Google announced their smart displays coming out later this year, and they've all got cameras on them. And right now, they wouldn't, all the cameras do is for video calling. But there's no reason in a future software update you couldn't just hold the thing up and say, what's this? Or you couldn't just hold up a shopping list and say, buy all this stuff for me. I think Amazon will do that as well. I think the person, the company that we're kind of waiting for their move in this space is definitely Apple. They have, you know, they're a step ahead in augmented reality, but they haven't really done any computer vision thing yet. My hunch is, and I've got, you know, there's no definite proof for this, but my hunch is sometime this year we will see a sort of a Siri lens.
Yeah, and we are working on a few projects at the moment. Obviously, we do a lot of voice computing and messaging here, amongst other things. We're working on a couple of projects right now that would so benefit from us having access to assistant on phones, getting lens up, identifying, in this instance, somebody's face, and then recommending you know, products or lifestyle changes based on that right in assistant. And that's what I want to talk about primarily. What I'm excited about this year is the convergence of these things. The convergence is maybe an old term, but we have all these technologies that seem a bit disparate to me. So we have VR, we have voice computing, messaging, voice computing quite coupled. We have web, we have things like the customer chat plugin. So like getting all these things to talk to each other, or being in VR and issuing some voice commands and having that, you know, spawn in my world, or being on Messenger and then having a website know contextually the thread of that conversation is the kind of stuff that interests me. And I wonder if this year we'll start to see that come more together. Lens in assistant would be a prime example of that, computer vision and messaging and voice computing kind of all there together.
Yeah, and there are a lot, I agree with you. I think this is a kind of where everything's heading, is the term I've been thrown, not just me, but like a few people have been thrown around, is like the natural user interface. Because whether it's through voice or whether it's through typing or whether it's through a camera, it just uses whatever device you have around you, and you're getting access to this kind of centralized knowledge base. And I don't think it's a coincidence that everyone's working on their own smart assistants, because I think that's where it's all going.
Yeah.
When we talk about going back to augmented reality again for a second, when this eventually, as everyone predicts, goes into a headset and it's on your head at the same time, how do you prevent information overload? How do you choose what information you see when you look at something? There are still big problems with sharing information in augmented reality. So we all see the same thing in the same place in the same state. That's an incredible technical challenge. So there's a lot of questions still to be answered, but you're right, there is a general convergence going in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I guess perhaps we think about it as technologists, the general user just doesn't. It's a more natural way to remember. I just take a picture of it and it gives me what I want. We're thinking about it in segregated terms, perhaps, whereas the general user is not. They just know they can speak to it now, and that feels better than how they used to interact with whatever they're doing.
Yeah, but ultimately what the user wants is like whatever's going to make their lives easier and better, and they might not know that that's having all those things connected.
The struggles you're talking about with how to implement AR, Peter, kind of reflects how VR was a couple of years ago and probably still is. You know, it's a new experimental medium. How do I do locomotion in this? How do I not make people feel sick? How do I make sure the scale is right and the frame rate and stuff? Like, we need to do all that with AR once it becomes prevalent in some kind of wearable. Wearable. That's a weary wearable, a tired pair of glasses.
But I'm super excited about AR. You know, I think we're, again, very, very early stages now, and I don't think it's where it's going to be. Like, holding up our phones and waving them around in front of us is not the best way to do
it. I don't like that, yeah. I want holographic displays. That's why I really want, like in Star Wars, the proper ones.
It's just where we are now. And, you know, Apple just announced a new update to ARKit, which is their on-phone AR library, which does some really cool new stuff, like detecting 2D objects. So a poster, for example, you hold your phone up, have it detect a poster, bring that poster to life. Again, not new technology. The fact that it's now being brought into the camera at the hardware level makes it performant and fast and available to everyone.
For sure. And interestingly as well, vertical plane detection, because so far it's just been horizontal with ARKit and AR Core. So that's interesting. And they mentioned that it can detect shapes of objects. So like circular table. A cylindrical maybe, if you've got that kind of table. So detecting all these different shapes, and then that obviously gives you opportunities to overlay things onto your view of the world through your smartphone.
And like I said, you know, there's a lot of steps to go through to make this useful for everyone. I think what we're missing kind of is almost the AR cloud, like the thing that just ties it all together, so that we can share. As I said, if I leave a mark or an object in a location, you should be able to walk up to that, know that it's there, pick it up, look at it, be able to understand it and interact with it. But I think that's, I don't think we're going to see that this year, but I think we're going to see steps towards that this year.
Too disparate at the moment is what you're saying. Is that the point where a player like Snapchat can come in? We're working with a few brands and we've been talking about doing some AR work with them, and eventually they tend to go to someone like Snapchat because of this friction, as you touched on earlier, between app fatigue, as in, you know, I can make you this amazing AR experience using AR Kit or AR Core, but you need to download a native app to access it because the web technologies are not quite there. So players who are already there, such as could be Facebook with their AR Studio, could be Snapchat with their lenses, are they going to play more of a role, you think, in that kind of thing? Like, I've left you this object, pick it up and get a prize, or I left you a little present, when you get home, you pick it up. That kind of thing you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll definitely see, you know, aggregators in that way. It's too much to ask that everybody downloads a different, and I'm no doubt people will do it to begin with, and they're trying to get people to download apps and to do different things, but I've no doubt there will be people well positioned, and it will be the same people that we already know, and possibly Snapchat, who are well positioned to be able to kind of tie all that together.
But part of that is about where people are organically as well, because I think it is hard for brands because you've got all this new tech coming out and everyone's excited about it, but they don't really know how to use it. And even us, like, we're a creative tech agency, we are still learning how to use it and reading new things and experimenting. And you always say with VR, you know, it's a bit of a hype and it's kind of good for gaming, but we're nowhere near, like, ready yet to be using it with brands all the time. So I think the smart thing is to go with brands like Snapchat and Facebook, because that's where their audience are. And I think asking someone to download an app just to use an experience, like, that's just friction. I don't see that being
5 years ago that was the thing,
really,
right?
Successful.
But now people are just sick and tired of it.
It's super hard to get people to download a new app. Really, really, really hard.
You used to be able to get people to pay and download things and be happy.
It kind of goes back to that, the whole thing that we say, though, providing a service like Shazam. I guess computer vision's kind of like this shop app thing is like the Shazam for fashion in a way. And I think if you're providing a really, really unique experience like Shazam does, or this shop thing, I will download that. I think that it's really interesting. Then it's, oh God.
What happened?
I just choked.
You choked on
my
air?
On my own word.
Well, interestingly, you know, Apple have bought Shazam recently. So again, that's an independent big mover in the space has been snapped up by one of the big...
Yeah, there's a pattern there, isn't there? Yeah. Apple buy somebody, very interesting, and then 9 months later they release something class-leading with them.
And there is, you know, the idea of kind of audio recognition does go beyond voice. There's music recognition is a big thing for everybody at the moment, which is partly why they bought Shazam. And being able, the next thing is about being able to probably understand what's on your TV. So you could say, Alexa, who just said that when you're watching TV? And it would be able to go, oh, that was this actor who said that. Or, you know, when can I see this program next? And it goes, well, you're listening to this and that's on TV next. So being able to understand a lot more about your environment. And then again, that ties into the convergence where you've got your camera, which is also, you know, able to understand the things around you. And eventually it comes onto this idea of an AR headset or whatever that's just capable of taking any input from anywhere and making sense of it.
Yeah, the contextual thing, linking things up to make things easier for you, I think is a strong element. And I think that's where voice computing probably should be going to. We do a lot of, you know, actions and skills and stuff like that. But I think like having like a flash briefing related to a brand is quite powerful. Because depending on the depth of it and the steps you have to go, it can be a little bit like a multiple choice, or it can be a little bit tedious.
Yeah.
If you can get quickly contextual information relevant to a brand or service with just a quick invocation, contextual to where you are, what the weather is, how you're feeling, how much sleep you've got, all those environmental factors, I think that's quite a powerful play and makes lives easier for people. At the moment, I think a lot of voice computing is cool, but it doesn't really make it easier for you to get what you want, whereas computer vision is doing that already.
It's kind of the standard pattern of taking the previous media and bringing it into the new one. Have you got this room booked?
Oh, you're not like a wife thing.
Yeah, yeah. You're famous now.
Beth has just walked into the podcast.
Yes. Oh, am I actually live? Sorry, everyone.
Don't apologize, Beth. You are just trying to do your job whilst we are mindlessly jibber-jabbering.
When a new media comes along, like, you know, voice is not particularly new, but the voice platform is new, and so people are still treating it like websites or apps. They're trying to take their old thing and put it into the new one. And we're trying to make kind of clients understand that sometimes a really, really brief user interaction is a perfect brand interaction.
Yeah.
If they just want an answer from you, if your brand is a cosmetics brand and the person says, you know, oh, what's the best lipstick shade to go with that clothes? And it gives you the answer.
That's it.
That's a perfect brand interaction.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can, that kind of creates this feeling, oh, they know what they're talking about, and trust them and move on. But it's a really hard thing to sell to a client.
But I think that's
a 20-second interaction can sometimes be a brilliant one.
I totally agree with you. And if it's the same thing extended, oh, my skin's dry, what's the best thing to do? And it'll suggest the creams that it knows you've already got. It's got a history of how your skin is, what type it is, and knows the atmospheric conditions, knows the heating and like the levels in your house and the humidity perhaps, and just recommends to you what you need to do right then to get going. That's perfect. But as you say, it's a very short interaction. It's not how brands currently think about engaging with people. We're still measuring things by in old ways, you know, like dwell time, not page views, but number of interactions. We're measuring things in the wrong way too. So it's difficult to prove the worth of it if it's that short.
Yeah, and you know, a dwell time can be good if they're asking for a full routine and they want to know this, and then they go, oh great, what goes with that? But I think it's going to be less common.
Yeah,
I think it's
going
to be a lot less common. But it's, you know, it's, you can judge either one. A long dwell time can be good, or a short dwell time can be good.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
The quality of that.
Because with Shazam, that's like the shortest dwell time. We're like, what's this song? Great, screenshot. I'll send it to my Spotify, however it works.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Or your example from earlier.
Yeah.
What's this on the telly? Boom, those are the clothes in my basket, bought it.
And then you have a good, you know, a good positive feeling about Shazam because they got the answer right really quickly.
Mm. And then and it's not like a drawn out experience. You just close it when it's finished and there you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. Dwell time is dangerous, especially in marketing and PR. Kind of a lot of campaigns are based, like their success is based around that. And it's dangerous to do that now because it's not necessarily how long you spend on something.
Yeah, I guess it's what we've been talking about. It's about making people's lives easier and getting them the information they would like quicker with a minimum input.
Yeah.
So one other thing that I wanted to just briefly touch on was kind of advertising, digital advertising. It's in a really strange situation because although advertising spend is going up and it overtook TV spending for the first time last year, there is also a sense, well, not a sense, but for the first time more was spent digital advertising.
Okay,
it's a real shame you can't see faces on podcasts because yours was amazing.
That's not completely true. Procter & Gamble spent 100, I think it was like 100, I can't remember if it was 100,000, 100 million pounds less on their digital advertising and saw an absolute like zero difference in their sales.
But that's not, like overall digital spending went up and overall it overtook TV. But at the same time, there's a sense that it's not being seen. There's a lot of wastage going on. There's a lot of concentration of advertising power in the hands of Google and Facebook and soon Amazon, who are starting to bring up a really good advertising platform as they become like they're almost becoming like the de facto pre-purchase search engine. Even if you're going to a shop or another site, you will search Amazon to get the reviews and find out more. And so a lot of advertising coming there. And yet there's a lot of digital ad spending outside of those big companies that people are very irritated by. They don't like it. They're installing ad blockers. Apple introduced tracking blocking in Safari to stop ads from tracking you. And one company whose name escapes me now have already kind of marked down their revenue forecast this year by like 15 to 20% purely off the back of that because that's what they do. And Google have said that from February this year, they will be introducing a lot more stronger blocking of ads or blacklisting ads in their Chrome browser as well. They recently announced a bunch of stuff yesterday about giving you more power to stop the types of ads that you find intrusive. So it's really interesting that as there's this bigger spend, there's also this, I think there's a kind of a bit of a crisis coming in digital advertising.
Good.
Why is that good, Gordon? Do you not like advertising?
There's more places to put the advertising, though. I think that, like, you have to think about that too. So, obviously, with the Messenger, the new update on Facebook Messenger, and there's all the apps and everything like that, like, I think there's more platforms now and spaces for the advertising to be seen, and that's potentially why it's going up too.
Yeah, which is, again, going into the hands of Facebook. You know, Facebook, Messenger, Instagram, they haven't put ads on there yet, but WhatsApp is a potential revenue thing in the future. And then you've got all of Google's properties and everybody else who does advertising, especially the big publishers, The Guardian Group and the New York Times Group and everyone else who kind of relies on advertising is finding themselves with a lot less revenue.
So right, the medium to small players who basically like made all their money off ad revenue, and now they make, I don't know how much less, but a lot less.
A lot less, yeah. And that's kind of, we're seeing a crunch in the advertising funded model.
Mm.
People like BuzzFeed having to lay off staff because
advertising
is their model. And Facebook, especially virality, is a big part of BuzzFeed's revenue model. And Facebook again announced recently this year that they are deprioritizing shared links on their newsfeed to prioritize posts from your friends and family, but deprioritize posts from publishers and pages. So it's going to be an interesting year, I think, for independent publishers and people who rely on advertising in that way, despite the advertising market seeming very healthy.
Interesting what you're saying, and not really reflected on it until this very moment, Peter.
Why not, Gordon? In the future, you should consider becoming more professional.
In that respect, because the big players, as you say, are able to make a switch, flip a change, and they have the money to back themselves, and obviously Google are going to make money off advertising. It's the small to medium players, and probably the places we get most annoyed when we're looking on our favorite niche interest site and we get something pop up in our face or something flashing in the corner. We block them, no trouble, but it's more difficult to block a platform you're on, such as Facebook. So it's interesting, the effect of this interruptive advertising annoyance is going to hit the smaller players.
Absolutely.
But they are usually more annoying.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well,
yeah, no,
like when
no
you're
doubt.
On Facebook, I get like, you know, ASOS or misguided kind of pop-ups on the side, and they're on the side, so they don't really affect my life. And actually sometimes I find them kind of helpful because they're recommending me things that I've looked at before.
Sure.
But if you're trying to watch a video on YouTube and you literally have to sit through an ad, or sometimes like when I'm trying to read a news story and like a whole screen pop-up comes up and I can't even work out how to close it, so I just don't read the article. Like, that's the kind of stuff that annoys me.
It's super annoying, yeah. But obviously you install an ad blocker or do something, then you get half the sites begging you to switch your ad blocker
exactly.
off, or let tell you can't have access to content if you use an ad blocker. So.
Yeah, and the companies that do take advertising, online advertising, very seriously, like, I mean, I know lots of people who work at The Guardian, they had, you know, years of effort to make their ads unintrusive, you know, light, fast, not lose a lot of tracking, that type of thing, because they knew this was coming.
Yeah.
But once people install an ad blocker, that's it.
They're caught in the crossfire,
basically. Everywhere, they're caught in the crossfire, and people will not uninstall that ad blocker afterwards.
No, you're not going to make an exception for The Guardian. I mean, I think they're one of the ones that do beg you to make an exception, I think.
Well, The Guardian have moved towards now a subscription-based model, but not a paywall model, which is really interesting as well. It's like, we want all of our things to be open. We're just asking you to please pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working. Like, they're actually making revenue. I think for this year, they're predicted to be in the black for the first time for quite a few years.
Okay.
But how does that work for everyone? I don't think it does work for everyone. I think it works for a small handful of people. And certainly for users, you won't be able to subscribe or support 5, 6, 7 different independent sources. You'll have to choose one or two. And that kind of goes back to the days almost of buying newspapers again.
Hmm. So we kind of need a new model for advertising, certainly web-based advertising. Do you think, Peter, because I know you love the blockchain.
No!
Wait, no!
Don't stop.
Are you aware of the Brave browser?
I am aware of
Brave. And the basic attention token. This is an interesting attempt, even if you don't like blockchain stuff, to come up with a new advertising model. It's a browser where brands pay in this cryptocurrency. On startup, I think it's not yet implemented, but a bunch of ads are shown and that's it. So it's a specific browser and a specific currency to get around this problem of nobody wanting their browsing experience intruded on by advertising.
But then the publishers get paid in tokens. They can't then pay their staff in tokens, can they?
I don't know. It's not launched yet. This plays also into AR, and I don't know if we're going to have ads in voice computing. That would be super annoying. But messaging, Twitter, if WhatsApp brings in, it plays into everything. How can we show advertising? How can we generate money and give people things they might be interested in without
annoying them?
What we do now, we've rebranded and we make services that we think people actually want and are helpful, right?
Hmm.
So we work with brands that we believe in and try and create services that are useful to the consumer. Like, that's great, but that's a minority. Like, most people aren't doing that. So as long as you're selling something that not everyone wants and isn't super helpful, which is going to carry on, like, at no point is there going to be a filter where it's like, well, are you selling something helpful? No, or you can't advertise it. How is that ever going to stop?
Well, I mean, that's tricky. People tend to resent being followed around the web or like picking up on a cookie of previous preferences. You know, if you're looking to buy a suitcase, let's say, I buy a lot of suitcases, I'm a suitcase, vintage suitcase collector, that's a lie. But, you know, you get followed around your entire life unless you do something against it, offering you that suitcase, whether you bought it or not. It often doesn't have the, you know, purchase information. I've already bought that freaking suitcase, leave me alone. That's so actually, that can be more annoying than generalist advertising.
And that's actually one of the things that Google said yesterday, that they will be giving people the option to opt out of those. Like, just because I've looked at it once doesn't mean I want to see it forever.
Yeah.
And so in your preferences, you'll be able to kind of unblock products on a product, on a product basis.
But that's tailored, you know, to what I'm interested in, because I've almost nearly bought that already. So.
But it's not necessarily, because RMD Rob, who was actually telling me a story a few weeks ago about one of his friends who is a female, and she had at one point Googled a pregnancy test, you know, like Clear Blue pregnancy test, where can I buy it near me? And she'd done it on her work computer, and I think it doesn't really matter when she did it, could have been at lunch, could have not, like a quick search. And she was trying to show her boss a piece of work and it was following her around the web. And Rob was just like, that's just outrageous.
You do get these like conspiracy theories. And when we talk about convergence and advertising, what if the man knows everything about you?
Yeah.
And you've finished a phone call. Okay, yeah, I'd love to see you tomorrow night at that restaurant. And then you go on your computer and the restaurant pops up. There's people give these stories, you know, it's just on WhatsApp, I mentioned this brand, and now here's my recommendation on my phone and stuff like that, you know. People have conspiracy theories that that's happening behind the scenes, but there may well be a system like created for that kind of cross-platform brand recommendation.
Yeah, and you know, advertising does need to get better. It does need to be cleaned up. It's too intrusive. Tracking scripts follow you everywhere. They force you to download data you don't need. They're not always, you know, and targeted advertising is a useful thing. Like, I've discovered things through advertising that I didn't know that were well targeted to me. My wife went and saw a talk by one of her favorite authors that she didn't even know was happening, except that it turned up as an advert in Instagram, which was targeted to her. So it works when it's really well targeted, but most of the time it's not.
Yes.
Most of the time it's intrusive and it's not personal enough. The other day, just as a quick example for that, I did a Google search for a salmon recipe because I was cooking salmon for my dinner.
It was
actually very nice. I was surprised because I cooked it, but it was actually very nice. But then I went into my Google app on my phone and all of a sudden it's giving me news alerts about salmon.
That's a bit of a leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes! Boom, joke of the day.
That is really bad.
You know, Peter laughs. Peter never laughs at my jokes.
Let's end it there.
Amazing. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next time.
Next time, well done.
In about a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
This one's about 2 weeks out from the last one, so we're trying to keep the momentum going for you. Now we're so popular.
And now we finally have a recording setup that we're kind
of
happy with.
Yeah, guys, you can't see this, but we have a proper podcast room now.
Maybe we should do a vidcast.
We should do, and they can see the carpets we attached loosely to the walls and the 600 toilet rolls I brought in to dampen the sound.
It's not true. There's actually it looks good, and now you've made it sound like
there's some toilet rolls over in the bag there.
Okay, bye.
Okay, see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.